Hey there, I'm so pumped to tell you about an amazing new community I've launched called Grief to Growth Circle Community. It's a space for people who are grieving to come together to support each other and for people who want to know who we are, why we're here, and where we're going to have those conversations, all the things we talk about on the podcast. So I invite you to join me at grieftogrowth.com/community to become part of this compassionate crew. The best part is 100% free. And you have access to me in addition to everybody else in the community. In fact, the podcast will be there so you can talk about the things we talk about in the podcast right there in the community. There's also some premium content if you want to go deeper in the work I'm doing, but mostly it's about building relationships and community and about sharing resources and supporting each other. So come on over and check it out. It's grieftogrowth.com/community. I'll see you inside.
Hi there. Before we start, Brian would like to share a couple of things with you. First, did you know that Brian is a life coach, a grief guide, and a mental fitness trainer? Brian would love to help you with whatever life issues are challenging you. Brian has years of experience as well as training. You can contact Brian at www.grieftogrowth.com to learn more. Brian is the author of the best-selling book, Grief to Growth, Planted, Not Buried, which you can get on Amazon or Brian's website. This is a great book if you're in grief or to give to someone you know who is dealing with grief. Lastly, Brian creates free and paid resources for your growth. Go to www.grieftogrowth.com/gifts. www.grieftogrowth.com to sign up for his newsletter. Choose a gift just for signing up and keep up with what Brian is offering. And now, here's today's episode. Please enjoy.
Hey everybody, I'm Brian back today with another episode of Grief to Growth. And today I'm thrilled to introduce to you Lisa Friedman. Lisa holds a PhD in art therapy, an MA, and an EDS in mental health counseling. Throughout her life, she's been deeply interested in the intersection of art, spirituality, and psychotherapy. And she believes those are all interconnected. Lisa has been an artist since childhood, and she had spiritual experiences at a young age. In fact, her first experience, she reports, was the age of 6, and I'll let her tell us about that. But later on, she had encounters with light beings who would visit her before bedtime. And her spiritual journey took off at the age of 19 when she began practicing transcendental meditation, otherwise known as TM, which eventually led to her various spiritual awakenings. Now, a particularly significant experience occurred a few years ago when she received a message urging her to share her spiritual energy with others. This led her to organize meditation groups where she and the participants experienced energy flows together. The gatherings evolved into sharing wisdom and energy from a state that she calls boundlessness. Lisa believes that while sharing this shift in consciousness helps everyone move closer to the one, to the infinite, or to what she calls the boundless, ultimately leading to a ripple effect and expansion in human consciousness. She guides people through energetic transmissions, assisting them in taking the next steps on their spiritual journeys. She has over 40 years of experience as a psychotherapist. She's trained and been certified in several modalities, including transpersonal hypnotherapy and Ericksonian hypnotherapy. She's also the founder of the Enneagram School of Awakening. And she refers to her approach as transpersonal psychotherapy, and she helps people work through personal limitations while guiding them back to their true nature, which she says transcends the personal. She's authored 2 books, Boundless, which details a journey to the boundless, and From the Heart of Boundless, which discusses obstacles and issues that may hinder our connection to the boundless. So with that, I want to welcome to Grief to Growth, Lisa Friedman.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you today. And I have to start off telling a little story. I was just talking with someone just right before I was talking to you. It's 10 o'clock on Monday morning. My first appointment was at 9 o'clock today, and I just met this person for the first time. And I said, what do you do? And she said, I'm a transpersonal psychotherapist. Wow. And I was like, okay. So then I get off the call with her and I start to prepare for our conversation today. And I looked up your bio again just to refresh myself. I'm like, I must have pulled up the wrong bio because I'm talking to 2 transpersonal psychotherapists in a row. So I see that as a synchronicity. I thought that was really interesting.
I do too. And I'll say just a couple of words about transpersonal psychotherapy, because people are like, what is that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
So I called myself that before it became popular to actually get a degree as a transpersonal psychotherapist. You can do that now.
Right.
But I was sitting with myself thinking, what is it that I do? I help people work through their personal issues and then go beyond that to beyond the personal, to a spiritual connection. So it's both. So I, you know, it's not like I avoid or ignore a personal issues, but you know, to resolve them so that we can transcend that.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. And I think you're the third person I've talked to who's a transpersonal psychotherapist at this point, but it's not very well known. It's interesting you were doing that, you know, before it became something you can get a degree in.
Yeah, right.
So tell me about your, you know, you said you had an experience, I guess, when you were six, and you tell me about that experience.
Yeah, so you see, I let me also say that I like to talk about some of these experiences because I believe that most of us have had something like that, and we just go, oh well, I guess I don't know what that was, which I did too. It took me probably 50 years to sit back and go, what happened there? And maybe it was important. So I think we all do that. Anyway, so I'm walking to school, and the school was just like around the corner and down the bend, and my parents could watch me through the upstairs window. So it was really little, but, and I grew up in the Bronx, which was kind of safe back then. It became not so safe, but you know, okay. So I'm walking to school and I look down at my little feet, which I was wearing Buster Brown shoes. And I look down at my feet and I think, I'm here. Wow. And I look around. It's like I woke up and knew. Now, what could I possibly mean? I am here. Something more than this little person walking to school is walking to school. There's like the presence of beingness was inside me, and I recognized it. And then didn't think about it for many years, but that was my first awakening, quote, awakening kind of experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you had another experience. Well, I guess when you were like about 19, I think it was when you took up TM. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, but you know, I have to say probably the next kind of awakening events that happened, probably were the light beings that would come visit me.
Oh, yes.
The TM thing, you know, just to talk a little bit about TM, was my first way into really searching and meditating and exploring in a way that I knew that's what I was doing.
Okay, right.
But that I didn't stay with TM for very long. I probably was with TM for 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
And then had other teachers and so forth. But the light beings, which I call them that because I could feel their energetic presence, and they had some quality of light about them. So of course I call them light beings, but it started when I was 9 and went on till I was about 16. And why it stopped, I really don't know. Why it started, I don't know either, except that I have a little theory around it. It was the first, when I was 9, we moved into a bigger apartment and I had my own room.
Okay.
And I think there was something about having my own room, nobody else sleeping in there, you know, it was quiet, it was solitary, that it gave this allowed this opportunity. And so so I would be going to sleep at night. It was before I went to sleep. I was just sort of lying around. You know, I usually would start off on my back and I'm lying around, looking around, and I could feel the energy in the room shift a little bit. And as soon as it did that, I would, oh, they're coming. And then I would feel the weight of 4 of them sitting on my bed. I didn't exactly see them, but I could sense the light of them. I could feel the energy of them clearly sitting on my bed. And I would become very alert. And then they would ask me ridiculous questions like, what's your address and can you spell it for us?
Oh, wow. Okay.
and what's your name? I mean, they had asked me, you know, every night. So I knew they knew the address and they knew my name, but I would spell it for them and I would feel their energy and their presence. And I liked it. I wasn't scared. And then they would lift off the bed and they would leave and then I would roll over and go to sleep.
Wow. Okay.
And it was clear. It was like, oh, okay, now I can roll over and go to sleep. And then in the morning, I wouldn't think anything of it again. They never told anybody. And the next time after 16, I stopped having that connection, forgot about it, didn't think about it, didn't wonder why aren't I having that? So, you know, so that ended at 16. And probably in my 20s, 30s, when I would meet someone that I thought knew things, a psychic or a spiritual teacher, I would say, this happened to me. What do you think it was?
Mm-hmm.
And they would give me an answer that I would think, I don't think so. And I would go on. I can't even tell you what the answers were, but it was like, no, that doesn't sound right. So, but then I was learning how to do past life regression. I studied with the Michael Newton School. Mm-hmm. Institute. And I'm learning how to do past life regression, which means that people are doing past life regression on me. And there's a process where you go into trance and then you go back through your life, not looking for memories exactly, but you're just going back and you go to a time in your mother's womb. Mm-hmm. It's just a way of kind of accessing memory. And so I go to a time in my mother's womb and I have the conscious thought, well, I don't know what that is, but right, because the conscious mind can't do those things. But one of the first things that happens is I feel the energy of the group, and I call them my group, which is why when I read Frances Key's books, she calls them the team. It's like I have a group. It's like, oh my God, I have a group. She has a team. So the group energy is there. And I just started weeping. It was probably the most important part of the regression. I did remember something. I saw people that I had no memory of, but that didn't mean anything to me. What was big was that the group was there and I was reconnected with it. So that was really exciting to me.
Wow. So yeah. I'm curious, you said during the time from you were 9 to 16, so like 7 years, these beings are coming in periodically to your room, I guess not every night. Did they ever deliver any messages or did they just ask any questions?
No. But so later on, I understand.
Okay.
Should I? I'll go fast forward and then we can go back.
We can jump around, sure.
Yeah. Okay. So, they come in during the past life regression and I'm so excited, but I keep forgetting about them. You know, I think, well, I'll write in my journal and I'll ask questions. And then I would forget about the journal for months at a time, right? And then I'm walking down the street one day and these words come in like clear. If you've ever had that where words come in, you know they're not yours and they're coming from somewhere. And the words are, it's time. And like, it gets my attention. I'm like, okay. And then I realize, for what? It's time for what? I don't know what it's time for. So, but I take that in and I think, okay, it's time. It probably has something to do with consciousness and awakening and something like that, but I don't know what, you know. I meditate, I give attention to that. What could it be? So that's when I do decide I'm gonna ask the group, because maybe this is about that.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like so I say, what's this about? And this that energy that I recognize as their energy comes flooding through me. And I'm like, oh my God. Okay. It's time for this to come in. All right. This is fabulous. So, and I'm like in this altered state, and I take walks in this altered state, and I sit in this altered state, and I'm grateful, and I cry, and I journal. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. And then I hear very clearly, this is not just for you. Like, oh, well, that makes sense, but it didn't occur to me. And then, you know, it's like, okay, well, I'll gather some people together and we'll meditate together. So I do. I tell a few people, and we, just a few, we sit and we meditate, and the frequency comes in big. And I don't say anything about it, but I, you know, I can tell the people are altered. And I, so then I go home and I journal, and they say, you have to tell them about us. Like, I don't really want to, you know, I'm a, you know, I'm a kind of sort of not really conventional, but it's like I present as a as a conventional psychotherapist, but I it's my secret that I'm not conventional.
Right.
You know, so I'm like, oh God. Okay. So the next time I meet with these few people, I say, did you notice the energy changing in the room? And they say, yeah. I say, okay, that's good. And I go back and I say, see, I mentioned the energy. He said, no, us. So then I have to go back and say, okay, there's a group of light beings that are sending a frequency of energy through me to you. And they've asked that I tell you that. And they go, far out. I used to have something like that. Hmm. You know, so it was like, it normalized it. And then from then on, I was able to say, okay, I feel the energy shifting, and maybe you will, maybe you won't, it's okay, whatever, and I'm just supposed to share this with you. So for the first 3 years of this, there was no words. I'd go home, and I'd journal and say, so is there a teaching? No, no teaching, just share the energy, share the frequency. That's what's important, to shift the frequency of humans, because the earth plane frequency is usually has to do with fear and anger. And this is lighter, and it's love and peace and connectedness. So shift that. Okay. I can do that, because I'm not doing anything. I'm just opening up and this is happening. So this is good. And then the pandemic happened. And the group went away, you know, no, there's no groups. I'm seeing clients only on Zoom, and I moved somewhere that was actually at a retreat center right before the pandemic, not realizing that I was about to go on a long retreat myself because of the pandemic, right? And so I wrote Boundless. And I wrote Boundless, and obviously there were words coming through. Ooh, I have to plug this in. It might die.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey there, something I want to tell you about today. My podcast platform, Buzzsprout, has recently made it easier for me to allow you to support me financially. Go to www.grieftogrowth.com/subscribe. That's grief2growth.com/subscribe. And once you're there, you can sign up to support me financially. Now, you can do it for as little as $3 a month, or of course, as much as you'd like. If you do that, you'll get access to bonus episodes, and you'll see those in the regular feed. They'll have a lock on them. But when you become a subscriber, you'll actually get access to your own private feed, and you'll be able to listen to the regular podcast along with the bonus podcast for the subscribers. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for sharing the podcast. And I want to thank those of you who support me financially. Have a great day, and on to the episode.
Let's just plug this in.
Yeah.
Let's just take a second to plug it in. Okay, I'm a little bit in a different place, but I think it's okay.
We're good. Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay. So now there are words.
Okay.
Coming from Boundless. And the words in that book, I describe very clearly how to move from a separate, contracted, suffering place to an expanded, boundless, energy, how you move from one to another. And so now there are words. Mm-hmm. And when I could meet with people again, there was a lot to say and a lot to share. Mm-hmm. So, and what that led to is, so there was, okay, so now there are words, and what that led to was, how am I going to share these words? And the first meeting I had where I was going to really actually let it flow through, I knew that it couldn't come from me. It had to come from that energy, and it had to come clearly from that energy. So I just automatically left my eyes closed. And I said, okay, I'm available, and what would you like to share? And the words would flow through, and there was, you know, things to say. And mm-hmm. then I would say, okay, we're open for questions and comments. And I guided people to only share from this moment, not like history or, you know, memories, but right now, and something that would help with their spiritual journey. And they would ask questions, and I would see the questions as energy, and I would see the answers as energy, and I would just wait for them to become words, and I would say the words.
Wow, okay.
And that's what's happening now.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's up to date.
Yes. We
about 50 years, but...
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. I'm so fascinated by the light beings when you were a child. Do you think they were just sharing energy with you maybe
all
the time?
That's what I think they were doing. I think they were sharing and altering my nervous system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I could feel their energy. And it was just a matter of, you know, like, what can we do to keep her just still enough to receive this? Well, we'll ask her silly questions.
You
know?
Yeah, yeah.
And cool, and you know, and I would answer them, and you know, when they were done with me, they would just lift off and float away.
So that feeling you had when you were six, when you felt like you were in there, how did that? Did you feel lonely? Did you feel disoriented? How did you feel?
Excited.
Okay.
Really excited. It was like, oh, I'm here.
Okay. Okay.
This is fabulous. I'm here. You know, it was like I had been walking around a little bit in a daydream,
mm-hmm.
you know, like a foggy, not really noticing things and moving through life. I mean, it was only a few years, but I think most people might spend an entire lifetime doing that. But life's okay. It wasn't bad. It's okay. And I'm just kind of in a dazed. And then it was like, all my senses were alive and awake. And now I'm actually seeing everything through these eyes, which somehow is connected to something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
Yeah. Yeah. That feeling of knowing that you're not your body, I think most of us, as you said, for most of our lives, we identify, this is me. You know, it's like, this is me. And you went beyond that.
That's right. That was the first inkling that was the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a profound thing. But it did take me quite a number of years to understand that came to me at such a young age.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. We're not our bodies, and we're not our minds, and we're not our emotions. We're something more. What we are is more than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the message of that they're getting to us now, what would you say is the core message?
That we are boundless itself. We're not the thoughts. We're not the emotions. We're not the body. We're not even the sensations. But there is something that is aware of all of that. That awareness is what we are. So we tend to think that when we are aware of our thinking or some experience, that we own that awareness. It's mine. It's my separate awareness, and you have your separate awareness, and everybody has their separate awareness. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a little bit true in that we are a portal, and it is very specific coming into us, but it is from the bigger oneness, awareness, boundless, oneness. I use those all those words interchangeably. Mm-hmm. So it's like the other day I was sitting with a bunch of people and I heard the birds singing. And it was so clear to me that the birds were singing in me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, like, well, what do I mean by that? Are they singing inside my head? No. They're singing inside something that I call my awareness. I'm conscious of the birds singing. But it was so clear that, okay, they're singing in me, and the me is awareness itself, is the boundless.
Yeah.
And they were such an example of that's what I am. And that's what we all are. And we, you know, yeah, so that's what we are.
It's a really interesting concept. And you know, it's because when I heard your story and you talk about six, I was about six when I felt very lonely. I felt very disoriented, and I felt like I missed that connection to, it's like, why are we so separate, was the feeling that I had.
Yes. Well, that's a big deal, too.
Yeah.
To realize that at six.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like realizing what's not true, but really feeling it. And, you know, like I said, a lot of six-year-olds are just kind of, la-di-da.
yeah. Like I said, for me, it was like, why? I felt like there was something missing that as I get to the point that I am now, where I'm, you know, hearing about your talking, and I'm listening to Seth materials right now, and that's just mind-blowing. And reading, you know, we both love Francis Key, the team books.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, this is the truth, you know, that we've forgotten.
Yes, this is the truth that we've forgotten. And so you mentioned the teen books and what they talk about too, which is, you know, when I was reading them, I was very aware of my group and the kind of quote teachings coming from there. And I knew that while there were light beings, they were also part of the one.
Right.
Not separate from that. It's not like, you know, there's the oneness, and then there's the group. No, it's like that they were getting their truth from the boundless itself, from the source. And in the teen books, they talk about that too. You know, they'll give their teaching, and then they'll say, yes, and, you know, we're connected. We're all one. That's all that's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that helped me really resonate with that as well.
Right. Well, it's interesting because I'm getting these different teachings from different places, and they're all saying, you know, the same thing. And it's when I read some of the things, and I asked you to send me some questions before, you know, like some things we could talk about, and you talk about like giving up our identity.
Oh, and yeah.
It's a very scary. First of all, people would say, well, first of all, what does that mean? Because I am my identity. How do I give it up? So help me to unpack that some.
I'm excited to announce I have a great new resource. It's called GEMS, 4 Steps to Move from Grief to Joy. And what it is, it's 4 things that I've found that I do on a daily basis to help me to navigate my grief. And I'm offering it to you free of charge. It's a free download. Just go to my website, www.grieftogrowth.com/GEMS, GEMS, and grab it there for free. I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, that's... That it's funny because that's what just occurred to me that we should talk about when you brought that, you know, right before you brought it up. So we're on the same page. So one of the most important things that I had to learn was giving up identity, and that I had. So I did TM, I did some other guru kind of meditation things, and then I found a teacher that I had for about 10 years. And what I got from her, mostly, I got a lot from her, but what really stuck was the identity thing. Mm-hmm. Really, I mean, it never occurred to me. You know, like she would say things like, you think that you're the kind of person that blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, one, I didn't even know I thought that, but yes, that's probably true. And I am that kind of person. Like, so what's the problem?
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, that, okay, that's true. And it was like, no, you're not. That's not what you are. So it made me kind of dig in there to like, what, and so many layers and levels of it, you know, it's like, okay, I'm the kind of person that may feel shame and sadness a lot. Okay, but now there are stories that go with it. What are the stories? Now that's part of my identity, that I went through this and that and feel these emotions because I went through all that. Now, is that true or not? Yes, it's true, but is it who I am? Or is it just things that I went through? And okay, so there's that kind of psychological level. Then it's I'm the kind of person. My identity is maybe my age or my gender, and which is of course a big issue these days. And I think it's great to try to figure out your gender. I do. I think it's a step along the way in individuation. Mm-hmm. But at some point, we don't have a gender.
Right.
You know, so it could be all those things. It could be that I identify with the kind of mind I have, with the kind of body I have, with the kind of emotions I have. And I had peeled away many, many layers of this. And then about 11 or 12 years ago, my marriage fell apart, and I had lived in a big home on a lake. It was beautiful, beautiful land and country, and had a big community, and had, you know, I taught art and meditation, blah, 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 great, and, you know, a lot of friends. And I kind of knew that if this marriage ends, I think I'm blowing apart my life. But I don't know how that's going to be. But I wound up having to leave my home, and I wound up moving to California briefly, but leaving everything that I had and going to California, and also knowing that, oh my God, this is really going to challenge my identity as a therapist, having a practice, having community, you know, people that knew me. I was living in what I call a small town, Gainesville, Florida. You know, people that live in the rural areas think of it as the big city, but yeah. I'm from New York. It's right. Not a big city. Right. So the identity that I had there, and I knew, okay, this is going to be probably bring up some stuff for me. And I got to California. That whole identity was gone. Psychotherapist, connected in community, group of friends, private practice, teaching art, doing art, whatever. It was gone. I was devastated.
Yeah.
In a way that I thought I would never have to be.
Right.
I was terrified. And that's an emotion that I didn't do much of. I did a lot of shame and sadness and some anger, but terror, not so much.
Right.
So I was terrified. And I could feel like, okay, now I really have to know myself without any of that, without any of it. And then realizing that also, in order to really live the truth that I am this boundless one, I can't even hold on to beliefs. I can't believe in it. It can't be a belief. It has to be something that I know so thoroughly in my body and beyond my body that, you know, that is not like, oh, I believe that that's true. It has to be known. So, yeah, letting go of all of our identity, because anything that sets us apart sets us apart.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi there. I'm really excited to tell you about my latest ebook. It's 4 lessons that you can learn from the near-death experience without going through all the trouble of dying to learn them. I've been studying NDEs for several years now. I am completely convinced that not only are they 100% real, but that there's some very universal wisdom that we can get from the near-death experience. And I've distilled that down in this book into 4 short lessons. And I've also given you all the reasons why I believe the NDEs are absolutely real. So go to www.grieftogrowth.com/NDE lessons to pick it up for free. www.grieftogrowth.com/NDE lessons. I hope you enjoy it.
That's really a concept I think that people will have to play around with and really, you know, and sometimes we can experience those things. Like you said, when we go through the loss of a job or a divorce, or in my case, the death of a child or of a spouse or something, because we start to believe that we are the things that are around us. And when those things are suddenly ripped away, it takes us to a different level where, you know, I can imagine you, as you were telling us, you land there and you're like, but I'm still me, right?
What am I without this? Yeah. I don't know, you know? And I'll just share just with you, we don't have to go into it at all, but I lost a child as well. So I know that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that I've heard a lot of people say, am I still a mother? You know, especially if it's an only child. And it's like,
yes,
that's a part of who you are, but that's not who we are.
But that's not who we are. Right. And so there's some things that happen to us that contribute to what we're bringing here, but it's not who we are. Mm-hmm. And if it's really a powerful thing, it's very hard to let it go. It was very hard for me to let go of that as my identity.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's terrifying because we think that's all that we have. And I know that people, when we first try to introduce these concepts to people, they're like, this, you know, it seems nonsensical. But as I've come along and I read about, you know, Frankie's books, the team books, and yours, what you're talking about, and I'm listening to Seth material right now, or I listen to books more than I read because I walk when I do it.
Yeah.
But it's like mind blowing because we are not, if you believe in reincarnation, which we've been different lives, we are. It's all happening at the same time. So we are all these things.
Yes, that's right. There is only, because there's no time and there's no space.
Right.
You know, there is, it's really one thing, you know, that however we look at it, all happening now. And it can be terrifying, but it's once you've crossed the road and you look back, you realize, oh God, there's nothing to be afraid of. It's you're letting go of something small for something infinite.
Right.
These little things, this happened to me, and this is how I know myself, and this is what I do, and people know me this way. I'm letting go of those little things for the eternal, for the infinite itself.
Well, you know, when you talked about your experience, and I was thinking about my own, I was interviewing a guy. And we were talking about the reasons we come to Earth, right? So people say, well, why would I choose this? Why am I here? Am I here to learn? Am I here to have experiences? Am I here to grow? If I'm already perfect, then, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he said something I'd never heard anybody say before. He said, part of the reason we come here is to feel that feeling of abandonment, to feel that feeling of being small, to have that experience of being alone and to be weak and be powerless. But then it's, ironically, we end up clinging to it.
And yes.
That's the problem, right?
Whatever that is. So, and that might be, I'll say what I'm going to say. That might be his reason. You know, he came to, it was for me to realize this. For some of us, it's something else, loss, grief,
Yeah, I don't think there's any one answer, but that was because we talked about, again, is it growth? Is it experience? Is it to learn? You know, and that was one I hadn't thought about, but then I realized that's something that's pretty much universal. At some point, I think we feel that, like, or, I mean, at least it was for me. It resonated with me.
It's true. It is universal.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Is it that? We all have to go through that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're here to know that we're the boundless and help everybody else.
Yeah. And we grow from that. That's how we grow, the empathy and all the things that we do. And again, once we start to peel away these layers, and I was listening to Seth this morning, he was talking about, I was the spice merchant in Denmark, and I was this and I was that, and I've been men, I've been women, I've been rich, I've been... And then that really allows us to drop the boundaries that we have when we're here. Because when I look at you, I'm like, I've been like you at some point. You know, we're a lot more similar than we are different.
Right. It's so true. Right. Yeah. But, you know, and there's a first phase of probably everybody's life where they're trying to figure out how they are different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a section in the second book that I wrote on gender, and when I was going to write about it, I Googled Wikipedia, how many genders are there now?
Yeah.
And it was something like 102 different genders.
I heard 47. Okay.
So I'm like, wow. Okay. Well, if we're going to go that far, then it's just all the little nuances that happen within Boundless.
Right.
I mean, I feel like, once you stop doing the binary thing, then it just proliferates into infinity.
Yeah.
So it's maybe the way of getting there. But it's when we're younger, we want to know how I am unique.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an important part of our growth to have that. Oh, I'm unique because I think like this, or, you know. So we're looking for that. And it has to be. It has to be really subtly nuanced, because most of what we are, we share with many, 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 many other people.
Mm-hmm.
So to find uniqueness is kind of difficult. But we're looking for that until we begin to realize, well, maybe it's more important to see how we are similar.
Yeah.
And this similarity goes beyond, because here's where people get stuck too. You know, they're like, oh, okay, you interview people. I do something like that. So we're the same.
Right, right.
You know, or you're reading Seth. I read Seth. We're the same. Oh, you da 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 da. And I did that. So we're the same. You know, and I've heard, and it's comforting to someone to do that. I've worked with people who will say, oh, yeah, you know, and I did art when I was younger, so we're the same. It's like, no, we're actually the same because we're boundless.
Right.
We are consciousness itself. We are the divine. That's we share that with everything in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a little different than having qualities or attributes or history. It's not on the individual level. It's way beyond that.
Right. Well, what I'm gathering from what you're saying, and again, we can relate to the team books, is that we are not individuals, and they say that, you know, Frankie says that over and over again in the team books. You're not an individual. We are team. I just see it now as like it's like nested, the way our reality is. So I'm within a team, and that team is within another team, and that team. I think that she went to this level of leagues, and you know, and then Seth talks about the different personalities, like. There's Seth and there's Seth too. And Seth is actually part of Seth too. So, and then he talks about all of his personalities that he's lived. So we are multifaceted, multidimensional beings living multiple lives at the same time. And it's just hard to even wrap your head around.
Right. It is. It is hard. We can't wrap our head around it. And I think that's what that's part of the letting go. Because
yes.
The little human mind it's too limited.
Yes, yes, you're exactly right. You get to a point where you just have to say, okay, I can't understand this from where that I am. Let's enjoy the experience that we're having. But also, again, we're not as different as we think that we are. We don't, you know, you talked earlier about identifying with certain things. And I was just thinking about this morning, you know, as I'm getting older and just had a part, my wife's from Kentucky. So we had a Kentucky Derby party like yesterday. My parents used to like that parties. I thought, yeah, one day I'll look back at these pictures. We used to be a lot younger. Now we're older. And, you know, I identified as being that 35-year-old guy, but now I'm the 61-year-old, 62-year-old guy. Which one am I, right? You know, because they're ostensibly different people. They look different. They think different. But I identify them all as being me.
Yeah, right. And then there are me's way beyond that too, right?
Yeah.
And we might, you know, some people start identifying as their age.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably a lot of people do, right?
I think it was a mistake that most of us make at some point in my life. My poor daughter, she would say things to me like, oh, Dad, you're so old or whatever. I'm like, and I remember sitting at the kitchen table with my grandmother and saying that to her. And she said, I'm the same person I was when I was 16. And
yeah.
She was probably about the age I am now. But I thought she was old as the hills.
And ancient.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
And so we do. When we're young, we think we're always going to be young. When we're old, we think of ourselves as old people. And you know, the truth is we're neither one. We're not the young person or the old person. We're ageless.
Yeah, we're not even a person.
Yeah.
We're not even a person. We're not even just a light being.
Well, that's
yeah,
true.
I like the nested thing a lot.
It's kind of where I am at this point, you know, as I'm evolving through this. And as I said, sometimes I just have to say, okay, I just really can't understand this, that there's no time and I'm multidimensional. And Seth talks about like, well, that personality that lived as that spice merchant in Denmark, that personality still exists and it's still going on. It's still part of me, but it does its own thing. And I'm like, wow, that's really crazy.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So I like the fact that what you're doing is helping people to open up to this, to start to understand it, because I think it's really important in our world that we move beyond this small thing that we think that we are. I mean, I think that's the cause of like 99% of the problems that we have in the world.
I totally agree with you. I think it is the cause of, yeah, we could say all, but 99 is good enough.
Yeah, I'm just going to let myself a little bit of wiggle room. But yeah, the fact that it's like, okay, well, I can't, if I get this, then or you get this, then I can't have it and vice versa. And not being able to understand where other people are coming from, you know? Well, right, the thing, the gender thing. Well, clearly there are only two genders. And I'm a male and you're a female. Why can't you figure that out?
Right, so simple.
Yeah.
But I think it's the beginning of entering into boundless. Like, if we keep proliferating, okay, there's three, no, there's four, no, there's five, no, there's 10, there's 12, there's 30, there's 40, it's like, you know, it's like, okay, it begins to be like, all right, maybe it's infinite, and maybe it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's where it gets
maybe to. It actually doesn't matter because it's so hard to figure out.
Well, you know, just a couple of days ago, we're having another crisis at the border because we've got, you know, people are coming because of the COVID restrictions or something. There's going to be a lot of people coming. And again, this is just the way I think. I'm like, why do we have countries anyway? Well, let's get rid of the boundaries.
Right.
Why do we have them?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I know. Yeah. And so the little unique thing that is happening, and I don't think it's just happening through me, what we might call me. I think it's happening in lots of different places around the world, or around the world, is that there this energetic shift that happens when I allow this connection to happen, helps people have an experience in that moment of, oh, that's, you know, and they don't have the words for it, but yeah. it helps actually get that connection.
Yeah, I was partying on Saturday night, was having a conversation with the neighbor next door, and I live in a very conservative area, and we've only talked at that level a couple of times, and she said, well, I'm a middle of the road kind of person, and because she doesn't want to be, you know, take either side.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were talking about certain things. We've talked about a couple issues, and we're talking about choice, you know, women having the right to choose. I believe women should have the right to choose is what she said. I said, okay, well, she said, does that make me a liberal?
Uh-oh.
No, it doesn't make you anything. It just, the women, you think women should have a right to choose. And we talked about another issue, and she goes, well, but I'm supposed to be, you know, on that side. I said, no, there are no sides. You know, if you feel that women should have the right to choose, you shouldn't be defined by the fact that, you know, your father was a Republican and that's the position that you have to take. And that's what these boxes that we put ourselves in, we get ourselves all tied up in knots.
And that's the identity thing.
Right.
You know, we're going to identify politically as something. And then we find ourselves thinking outside that box. Oh, my God, we're challenging our identity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is. Forget about it. You know? Yeah.
Well, it's politics. It's religion, you know. And the thing is, so if I say something that disagrees with your religion, then you feel personally attacked, right? Because you've identified with it.
Because that's what I am, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it all has to go. And, you know, what I also like to share with people, because there have been moments for everyone where they believed in nothing, they weren't on a political side, they weren't on any side of all, you know, and in the moments, you don't realize it. So for some, in the Asheville area, people love to go hiking. They're hiking up in the mountains, and it's beautiful, right?
Sure.
And so there's usually a moment where somebody's hiking and they reach the top of something. They look out at the vista and they go, oh, and they're one right then.
Right.
And there isn't a belief that I'm one. There isn't a belief in how beautiful it is here. There isn't a belief that I'm a person. I'm this kind. It's all gone.
Mm.
And in that moment, nothing defined them. Now, the mind comes back in and says, oh, this is a good spot. I'll have to come back here. I like it. I should take a picture of it.
Yeah.
And then I can go, I can look at it at home and do that again. And it never does. It never works again. Because in that moment, there was no effort. There was no trying. There was no belief.
Mm.
It just opened like that.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that's important around knowing really the truth that I am boundless is relaxing deeply. You know, how do we let go of everything? You can't, but you can relax deeply and you can accept whatever is showing up. You can be in a mode of, I'm not going to fight with my thoughts. I'm not going to have any concept that I should have no thoughts in my mind.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to just let them be there. I'm going to accept that. Right now I feel this, but okay, I'm going to let that go and just feel that there's no right and wrong. It's all included. Whatever is going on is included. And as I sit and relax even more deeply, allowing and including, I'm stepping out of something. I'm stepping out of my separate self and I'm relaxing deeply in deep acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Go ahead. I was going to say,
what you just said reminded me, because I wanted to come back to transcendental meditation, because you said you only did that for a few years and then you did something else. I'm working with the guy who was part of the early TM movement, Kelvin Chin. You might know his name. But Kelvin teaches a style of meditation he calls turning within now. He's not part of the TM movement either. So what do you still do meditation? And is
I do.
Type or how
I
do.
Yeah, I do what I'm talking about. And it's more like abiding. I love that word.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it is, I sit with my eyes closed and just let go. just let go. And you know, and there's effortless noticing of what's going on. Maybe there's thoughts, maybe there's feelings, sensations. But if there's, so I'll give you a little example of stepping out of things. So let's say you sit to meditate, or I sit to meditate, and there's something nagging at me. Whatever, I should cancel that meeting. It's bothering me. I should cancel that meeting. You know, it's too much. I should cancel the meeting. And it's like, okay, I accept that this is going on, and I can't make the decision right now. But I can feel and see the thoughts around it and the tightness around it, and that's like a little ball or bundle of something that is, you know, contracted.
Sure.
And it's not a big issue, right? So it's, you know, but it could be, but it's not. But it's enough to get it's distracting me. So I kind of like put it all together and become the observer of it. Okay, I can see that. Yeah, I see that dilemma. And I step back into being the observer. But then I become aware that something else knows about this observer as well. And I lean back into that. That is what I call boundless, but it's in that moment, it has no label. It's just, there's something else there that knows about the observer and the dilemma. Boundless. And as I just sort of let go, relax deeply, and that separate self that has a dilemma just begins to dissolve into boundless itself. And then that could be my meditation. If there is no issue, then I just sit as, wow, you know, relaxing and being. So I think, yeah.
Yeah, another thing I wanted to ask you about, because I'm fascinated about the Enneagram. So how does that play?
Oh, that's a good question. So I worked with and studied the Enneagram for many years. Mm-hmm. And I just recently retired from teaching the Enneagram. You know, at some point, you have to retire from something.
I understand, yeah.
So, and I had set up the school, and my daughter teaches, and she teaches the essence of the Enneagram. And so, and there's three really good teachers in the school. So it's like, wow, you got it. You've all got it. I can just let you have it and back out.
Yeah.
But while it was a really important piece for me, so there was, when I began teaching it, I have to back up. So one of the things that I did for a long time was, I'm hesitant to mention names. So I studied with a group of people who was part of a mystery school. And one of the things that we studied was the Enneagram.
Okay.
And when I left the mystery school, I had signed papers to never teach anything that I learned within there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm being a psychotherapist and working with people and doing my own work. Right. Mm-hmm. And realizing that we're all reaching a wall, something that we're willing to let go of this and process that and release this. And then if I say, and now let go of this, everybody says, whatever the this is, it's different. You know, the person will say anything but that. I'll do anything, but I can't do that.
Right.
And so I'm thinking, this is the pattern. This is that Enneatype pattern that will not, that really feels like if I let go of it, I will die.
Mm.
And for me, I have the two patterns. And so I'm looking at myself while I'm looking at everybody else. And I'm realizing that if I don't do nice things for people, they won't love me, and I will be alone, and I will die.
Hmm.
That my value is that I do nice things for people.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to look at that. And then I'm looking at my clients and saying, okay, I'm recognizing this pattern and that one, and that pattern and that one, and that pattern and that one. So I started relearning the Enneagram from several other teachers so that I wouldn't breach my contract and learn, you know, like there's nothing wrong with learning from somebody else and then taking that knowledge and sharing it. Sure. So I started studying and learning from a lot of other people. And then I began teaching people. And what I realized that, and it's connected to the light beings as well, but when I learn something, I learn it and feel it energetically in my body. Mm-hmm. So I was beginning to recognize that each Enneatype has its own energetic component, and it has its own core knot that it's like doesn't want to let go of. It feels like it's going to die, you know, and it relates to identity. So for me, recognizing that two pattern in me after having several spiritual teachers and meditating for maybe 20, 30 years, I was still acting from this pattern. Mm-hmm. And it was still running the show. So it's like, it's a powerful tool.
Yeah.
And particularly if people use it for awakening or liberation, I don't like the use of the Enneagram to put people in boxes and judge them, or to put yourself in a box and judge yourself, or to become a better separate person that has this type.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting as you were talking about that. I've taken something called positive intelligence, and it's something that I teach now. And it's a lot of these things are similar. It says that we are a sage, that's who we are at our core, but we also all have this thing we call the judge, and then we have like these accomplice saboteurs, and there are like eight of them.
Yes.
So there's hypervigilant, there's a perfectionist, there's the pleaser, there's these different saboteurs. Yeah. And the guy that teaches that, I love him because he always says, don't say I am a hypervigilant. Don't say I am a pleaser. You have this characteristic, but that's not who you are.
Exactly.
That's my fear with some of these type things, because people will say, I am a two.
Exactly. And I'll say, I have the two pattern.
Yeah.
And so, and your method that it may have the same thing too, is that having the two pattern can be contracted or can be liberated.
Right.
And
yeah, so it takes something that's actually a good thing. We want to be pleasant to people, we want to be nice to people, and it overuses it to the point where it becomes detrimental. So we have to learn how to use that wisely, so that it's not something we're beating ourselves up with, but it's a tool. It's good to be good to people. It's good to be liked.
As long as it's not your identity. There was I don't even remember who this person was, but he was, I think he was being interviewed by someone, and this is so vague, but what stuck with me was he said, if I wake up in the morning and I don't feel good about myself, I buy a bunch of donuts and I go out and give them to all the homeless people. And then I feel good about myself.
Interesting.
And I'm thinking, that's a nice thing. I mean, I would rather not donuts, but but it sounded to me like someone with the two pattern.
Yeah.
Needing to feed the identity of being a two, so you would feel better, rather than do something that just made them feel better.
And that's where, when I work with clients, it's like, it's not what you do; it's the motivation you do it from. You can do the exact same act, and
exactly.
You know, I was telling my clients that, you know, eating healthy is a way of self care. I mean, we should all try to eat healthy, but also one day you might just want to have a donut.
Exactly.
And that could also be an act of self-care.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. Absolutely. And it's not, though, if you feel guilty and shame yourself about eating the donut, but if you totally love that donut and enjoy it completely, then it could be an act of self-love.
Yeah. So this comes back around to that thing about, you know, understanding who we are, understanding that we are all these boundless thing, and we're having these this human experience, what we're going through, these things. And in this particular incarnation, because I was talking with somebody today, and they were saying that I need to let go of my my intellect. I rely too much on my intellect, and you should really, you know, let go of more like that. And I was listening to Christian Sundberg, who's had these multiple life experiences, and he talked about, like, he said, in this life, I decided I was going to have a good intellect. So that's my thing. That was one of my things for this life. And I'm like, okay, maybe in another life I wasn't like this, but this is who I am in this life, and that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. And know that you're boundless with a good intellect.
Yeah, yeah. So we all.
I mean, you see the difference, is that, and I have experienced. I mean, I've been around people who have the identity of intellect, and I don't feel that in you.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's kind of my way of processing things, I guess, you know, because when I was a little kid and I started having all these issues about, like, death and hell and all the things I went through and feeling alone,
yeah.
I turned to books. I'm like, I'm just going to read everything I can possibly find. And I still do that. You know, I every day I'm reading something else.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not as much of a feeler. I'm trying to be more of that, you know. And it's funny, I was working with Kelvin, who I said he came up in the TM movement. He was really high up in it. And he teaches something called Turning Within now. So I've been meditating for 30 years probably at this point. And I'm like, Kelvin, am I doing it right? You know, he goes, there is no doing it right.
Yeah.
There's no doing it wrong. The only thing wrong is if you're trying too hard. So
that's right. I like him. Yeah, yeah. I like him. Yeah.
So when you were talking, right. I'm like, this is what I'm doing. It's like, okay, just let it go. Just let it go. And even if you're having a quote bad meditation, the fact that you meditated means that's what it was supposed to be.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Well, tell people about your books, a little bit more about your books.
Okay.
What they can find in them and where they can get them.
Yeah. Okay. So two books. The first one is Boundless. And in Boundless, I describe from many, many different angles how to let go into Boundless, how to find it, how to recognize it, how to let go into it, and some stories about how it happened for me, like the six-year-old story and light beings and the Enneagram. And, you know, so it's a lot of that is in that book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on Amazon, it's on Audible and paperback and Kindle. And then From the Heart of Boundless is also how you get to Boundless. But it occurred to me that there are many different things that come up in us that block it.
Right.
And how to deal with that.
Right.
So it's a little bit of a little bit more practical in a sense. And it is also Audible and on Kindle and paperback, so they can get it there. Also, let me say that I have a Monday night Zoom group. I have a Monday night Zoom group on the. I'm trying to think which Mondays they are, because there are two Mondays a month, but they can look it up on my website. So two Mondays a month is only Zoom, and two Mondays a month is Zoom and in person.
Oh, okay, cool.
So if you're in the Asheville area, you could actually come to a meeting. And in those meetings, I play the crystal singing bowls a little bit. We meditate a little bit. And then I let go and go into that state where I'm receiving from another dimension or from Boundless itself, we could say. Mm-hmm. And people ask questions and there are answers. And so that's the process on the Zoom and the in-person Monday night thing. I also do retreats in this area.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So there's one in the fall in Flat Rock, North Carolina. Beautiful, beautiful place.
Nice. Sounds great. So, Lissa, how can people reach you?
So, LissaLFriedman.com is the website.
Right.
LissaLFriedman.com is the website. And there you can email me through that website. Mm-hmm. That's probably the best way.
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure talking today. Thanks so much for
doing this. Yeah, I had fun. You're good. You're good at this.
Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Okay.
Hey there. If you liked this episode, come on over and talk about it. Let me know what you liked. If you didn't like this episode, come on over and talk about it. Let me know what you didn't like. Go to grieftogrowth.com/community and look for Talk About the Podcast. I'll see you there.